Andy.
Hello, Linda.
I'm standing in the most brutal architecture Boston has to offer.
You're slandering in the most brutal architecture Boston has to offer?
I'm slandering.
Is it making you speechless? Are you forgetting how to talk because of these harsh concrete rectangles surrounding you?
My confidence have been oppressed out of me.
The cold geometry of brutalism sucks the humanity right out of you.
It does, but I kind of like it. We were just talking about how it kind of feels like when you're in the Redwoods. Because the building that we're in right now, it's like all concrete. The ceilings, I don't even know how high that is. Maybe 50 feet? It's just ridiculous. But it's just like cold, hard angles.
What building it is?
No life. City Hall Plaza.
City Hall Plaza. What are you doing there? You doing some politics?
Yeah, I just figured I'd like run for office.
Just real drop quick. In. Get on city council.
Yeah, they need me.
Don't all cities need you?
Yes. I am in Boston for work stuff, and our office is right across the street from this crazy brutalist building. And the engineer that I just onboarded was like, I want to go in that building.
Classic engineer thing to say. I want to go in the big rectangle. I want to go in the Death Star.
In the big brutalist building. So me and him and another engineer who just started just went and checked it out.
Your team's growing over there. You're popping off.
Popping the fuck off. It's true. We got 108 people now.
Wow. Triple digits.
I know. Triple digits.
Good for y'all.
Thanks.
I have never been to the Redwoods. It's one of the things I really want to do, but I have never been to the Redwood Forest or any of the Redwood Forests.
Oh my goodness. You gotta go.
I hear them trees is big.
It's not even really the size of the trees. I mean, yes, that is impressive. It's like the feeling that it puts into your body that you can't anticipate. Andy, when you walk on the floor under the redwoods, there's like, depending on what time of year it is, there's this squishy forest floor that, oh, it's so delightful to run on. It's so good for your knees.
What makes it squishy?
All of the, like, pine needles or whatever they are that have fallen and started to decompose. It creates such a nice floor.
What time of year is that? What's the ideal redwood season in your mind?
Well, so when I was in San Francisco, you could get to them pretty easily. And I would end up around some redwoods most weekends doing trail running. And it's pretty much the same season all year round there.
So it doesn't
matter.
Like,
the weather doesn't change that much, right? So it doesn't really matter.
West Coast problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Those seasons.
Yeah, you might wear, like, a slightly thicker North Face jacket.
Yeah, exactly. Your
Patagonia, please.
Your mid-weight Patagonia
right. That
you bought to code.
It's a little chilly.
Yeah.
But
you're going to need a fleece.
I'm going to need that fleece. Now I'm looking at a Hard Rock Cafe. Did you ever go to like Planet Hollywood or Hard Rock Cafe as a child?
I have been to exactly one Hard Rock Cafe, I think, and no Planet Hollywoods.
Okay.
I can't remember the occasion now that you mention it, but I have been to the Hard Rock Cafe in Baltimore sometime early in my college career. I'm guessing some family was in from out of town, and they were like, we're going to the Hard Rock Cafe in the Inner Harbor, which is, as you might imagine, a fucking nightmare. The place is terrible.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there's one here, and I'm wondering if it's even open, but, huh.
Is my
parents
one in every major
really
city? Is that the deal with them?
Yeah, and then you, like, collect the shirt, you know, you get your, like, or the hat, you get your merchandise from whatever city you went to, and it's like, yeah, Hard Rock, Las Vegas, and people are like, whoa.
And I assume they are always in the shittiest, most touristy, least authentic, least interesting part of a city, right?
Correct, but when I was growing up, I didn't know that. I was just so into it.
That whole industry kind of really bums me out. Like, the Inner Harbor in Baltimore really is upsetting to me because Baltimore is a great city. There's lots to recommend it. Lots of very interesting, cool things about it that are unique to cities in this part of the country. You can't find in D.C., you can't find in Philadelphia, you can't find in New York. But you go to the fucking Inner Harbor, and it's just Baltimore trying to be D.C. It's like, here we are, you know, trying to feign all the, like, cool things that other big cities have. And it's, like, super bummer. And then it's mostly a bummer because it's successful. Like, people that are not familiar with the city, all the time. This happened to me when I was flying back from Portland. I talked to somebody in a fucking Hudson News in one of the airports, and they asked me where I was going, and I said Baltimore, and they said, ah, the Inner Harbor is beautiful. And I was like, yeah, totally. Totally is. Like, it works. People like it when they're not familiar with the city. And it just, like, it's very disorienting to me. Like, if you're going to visit Baltimore, visit Baltimore. Don't visit the same thing that's in every horrible city. It's like Times Square is the Inner Harbor, is Fisherman's Wharf, is National Harbor in D.C., or the mall. The mall's actually got more going on.
Yeah, and it's all, like, the same chain restaurants and stuff. And I think that, like, for people like my parents, it provides you with familiarity. So you're in a place that's uncomfortable and foreign, and you're out of your routine, and then you're like, oh, but this is a thing that we know about, so...
Yeah, but, like, why are you traveling if you don't want to be challenged and put out of your routine? Like, is it just that people want to travel because travel is an aspirational thing, and they want the feeling of having traveled, and then the actual realities of travel, the thing that makes it aspirational, which is that it challenges you and it pushes your boundaries and puts you out of your comfort zone, that they don't actually want, and so they just go to Burger King and the Hard Rock Cafe and, like, the aquarium and the zoo in every city?
Well, I think that everyone has the right to decide how far open their mind goes. So
wrong again, people. Hi,
so, like, my parents, like, they love traveling, and they are really good at, like, getting an RV and doing, like, RV driving trips all around Alaska. So they'll do this stuff that to me is, like, super terrifying and, like, ambitious and awesome that they do that. But then, yeah, like, eating different food makes them really uncomfortable. So they'll, like, go grocery shopping and get, like, all the foods that they know and like, and, like, only eat that, even though they're in this place that probably has all kinds of, like, weird and crazy stuff that they would never experience anywhere else.
Alaskan king crab, like, those really big crabs.
And, like, they'd probably go to a Red Lobster in Alaska because they're like, we know the menu.
Yeah. I find that this is very common for food. I feel like food is such an intimate thing. Like, you put it in your body. You consume it. It's like, it's like way more out of your comfort zone for most people to eat an unfamiliar food or a mysterious food than it is to go to an unfamiliar place or do a mysterious thing.
Yeah, don't fuck with people's food choices. It makes them upset.
No, I know. I'm not actually being judgmental of these people, but it's like... I'm so skeptical. Like, the reason that the Inner Harbor succeeds, I think, is partially what we're describing. Don't actually want to push out of their comfort zone for whatever reason, either because that's just not the way they want to challenge themselves, or because they're lying to themselves about wanting to travel.
I totally felt this, like, or have felt this in the past, where you're somewhere in, like, Japan or something, and you're like, you know what? I've been doing nothing but new shit for the last 4 days. Oh my god, there's a McDonald's. Let's go see what weird shit they have at McDonald's. And they have, like, different sauces, and you're like, oh, but it's basically the same chicken nugget that is familiar to me. And this is nice for right now. So I get it.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Maybe. Anyway, I'm sure I'm sounding very judgy. But I also think that part of the reason it's successful is because this is, like, the powers that be, the money, the capital in Baltimore has decided that the Inner Harbor is where they're going to focus their efforts. They're going to do marketing for the Inner Harbor, and they're going to bring, you know, big brand names to the Inner Harbor, and they're going to put all this development money to the Inner Harbor. And that is why it succeeds, because that's the only thing people know about, because the cool local restaurant that I know about, or the, you know, the little speakeasy style bar, or the, you know, interesting local shop or whatever, doesn't do any of that, and so no one knows about it because people need to rely on bigger systems and structures to guide them in unfamiliar places. And I hate that money always wins, Linda. I fucking hate it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is what I think whenever I see an Instagram ad for something. I tweeted something to this effect a couple weeks ago. You might have seen it. I use enough ad blockers in my life that usually my recommended ads are hilariously off base.
Right.
But the Instagram ads, somehow, I don't know how, have actually been honing in on me over the past few months. And now, when I see an Instagram ad, I think, oh, that's a nice-looking shirt, or
yeah,
a nice little jacket. And then I like have to splash ice water on my face and be like, no, this is the Inner Harbor of jackets. Like, they're advertising on Instagram, and they've got some, like, you know, they paid a lot of money for some trendy brand. This is not the good thing. This is the thing that is advertising itself. And that's what I don't want of any of my experiences. I never want those experiences.
Yeah, it's so hard to know what you like. I was just trying to help Mark shop for clothes the other day.
Oh, boy, good luck.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know what I actually like. And so I dug for a minute into, like, men's fashion world and was like, ugh, yeah, there is not a lot here.
Men's fashion world is basically, like, you got a couple camps. You have, like, toxic masculine camp. And most of their fashion comes down to, like, athletic wear and athleisure and a kind of insistence on, like, you shouldn't have to think about fashion. So here's your, like, one simple answer, right? Here's the one hoodie you're ever going to need, and it's tough as balls,
and I do,
just like you.
And I do know which stores to go to for, like, men's high fashion or, like, higher fashion. Like, the people who are going to drop, like, $400 on some sneakers. Like, I know how to shop for that type of thing.
So your idea of high fashion is $400 sneakers?
Well, I mean, not high fashion, like, whatever. But yeah. Like, I feel like my dude friends who are, like, fashionable, that's a good way to market. Like, how much are you willing to spend on a pair of sneakies?
Or do you want sneakies at all? Is another question.
Because I can say
one of the other categories of men's fashion is what I call the put this on boys. Are you familiar with Put This On?
No, what's Put This On?
It's a menswear blog run by Jesse Thorne of MaximumFun.org. It's his other main project he's been working on for years. And it's like if you took hipsterism but embraced it completely unironically. Right. Like, this is the place where you can read a review about the best place to buy a three-piece suit and read a review about why you shouldn't wear shorts and sneakers because it's not proper formal wear. Like, it's informed by history. And if you dress that way in the modern era, you look like a hipster. But the actual, like, theory behind that fashion sensibility is rigorous. Like, these people genuinely love this stuff. And they'll talk all the time about, you know, whether to wear a cravat or an ascot to a garden party.
That's like a different level of high fashion. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a whole thing.
That's like, I dated one of those guys once. It was hilarious. He, like, only wore, like, leather shoes that were, like, made in Italy. Mm-hmm. And he, like, had a special shoe horn, and all of his shit was, like, custom tailored to his body.
Yep.
And it was, like, very attractive. But also, like, very expensive, and the amount of time that he spent, like, thinking about it was just like, not for me. No, thank you.
I'm actually, you might not know this, I'm, like, a recovering person from this world. This is, like, when I, like, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, when I got out of college, I was very much into this culture and community.
Wait, are you trying to tell me that you're a recovering shopaholic?
I mean, I wouldn't buy lots of things, but when I bought things, I paid good money for, like, the fancy high-class version of things. Like, the thing I was like, this is my one winter jacket I'm going to have forever. And it's from Britain, and it's, you know, made of wool, and, you know, all the kind of stuff that you can find on the Put This On world. And actually, I mean, part of it was I was able to identify with the power of hindsight that, like, a lot of the reason I was dressing up in my life in that phase is because I was a 23-year-old or 22-year-old that had just started a business and was going into meetings with 30 and 40 and 50-year-olds and needed to look like an adult. And there was a lot of, like, I'm going to dress better than all the people in this room, therefore I will be perceived as serious and perceived as an adult. So I did that for a long time. And I didn't own sneakers for, like, 10 years until I started working out. No, I only own leather shoes. That's all I have forever. I'm familiar with that.
There's a lot of people in the design space who are, like, very nicely dressed, but it's, like, this streetwear nicely dressed.
Yes.
You know,
I was not the streetwear
project.
One. I was not cool enough for the streetwear nicely dressed. I was like too old man style. I was like, here is my Oxford cloth blue button down and, you know, my nice slacks was mostly what I was doing.
Okay, I get it. I get that, yep.
But now I just really, I mean, part of it is that honestly I bought a lot of the stuff that I need. So, like, I own a nice suit. I own some nice shirts. I own a few nice sweaters. Pants you have to keep replacing because my ass destroys pants. But, you know, beyond that, it's like I don't really need to buy other things. I have a wardrobe that's pretty full, so I don't need to buy anything else to, like, keep up. And the other thing is that I got like, other hobbies. I had no hobbies, really, for, like, 4 or 5 years there after graduating. It was just doing the business, and this is what I spent my money on. And then now I have other things to spend my money on, like hobbies and a house, and so I don't buy clothes anymore. But also, I just don't give a shit anymore. Like, now I am 31. Now I feel like I am one of the adults in the room, so I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna wear, like, in the summer, I only wear gray t-shirts and 2 different pairs of shorts, and that's my uniform.
Yeah, I have to, like, remember to buy clothes now. But then I figure out what I like and I just go for it. I feel like my look right now is kind of like somewhat androgynous.
You think so?
Somewhat Japanese inspired. Yeah.
You've got a lot of, like, I feel like flowy dresses and muumuus and big pants.
Yeah, I've been moving away from that a little bit more. Like, my vibe all summer was to just wear, like, Lululemon with, like, just, like, straight up black tights.
Yeah.
With, like, a cool shirt that's, like, oversized and designy. Mm,
that's almost what I wore all summer, like, except my shirt wasn't cool. It was just gray.
Yeah, and now that it's fall and winter, I tweeted about this yesterday. I got my favorite sweater, 3 different colors now. So I just don't have to think about it. I like to uniform up.
Yeah.
Especially when it's cold outside.
I'm coming to appreciate a uniform, and honestly, one of the other reasons I've been dressing down more in the past, let's say, 3 years, is because I recognize that there's a lot of class implications with how you dress, and I'm not interested in projecting, first of all, I'm not interested in trying to, like, reach above my class and look like I'm wealthier than I am, and I'm also not interested in trying to, like, put up those walls and boundaries between people I'm talking to and me, so I just dress like a normal, which is not something I was thinking about 8 years ago.
Yeah, and I think that as you grow up, you can, like, afford things that are higher quality, that'll last a lot longer, and, like, feel a little bit better to your shape. And so you can, like, spend your money there and, like, investing in quality over, like, investing in, like, a label that'll show somebody what your status is.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a thing. I gotta say, though, my body has not changed too dramatically from working out over the past, like, 14 months, but some of my, like, tailored clothes do not fit anymore, which is a serious downside of getting healthy, because
CrossFit really did a number on my shoulders.
Yeah, my shoulders and my chest are the only things that changed enough that my clothes measurements would care. But, you know, I have two nice tailored suits, and those jackets don't sit quite right anymore. It looks a little bit too hip and tight.
Yeah, I feel like that's maybe one of the ways that the new American lifestyle is really pushing our body in an unnatural direction. Like, I think that we are meant to have, like, broader set shoulders than we naturally do. Because you sit, like, slouched over at a computer all day and, like, don't use those muscles at all. So.
Right, yeah. My frame before was definitely wrong. This is definitely closer to, like, what a human should look like, the shape I am now. But the scrawny, spindly-shaped Andy is the one that bought that suit. So we've reached a problem.
You're like, oh. Exactly. But good for you.
Yeah, I guess it's good. Except I didn't want to have to buy a suit ever again. That was one of the motivations for me buying a, like, semi-expensive suit. Is, like, if I buy a nice suit, then I have motivation not to get fat. But instead I got fat in the muscles, which is a different kind of fat.
My muscles got fat.
Yeah.
Can you reverse tailor your suit?
My pecs got chubby.
I got chubby.
I think the suit is made with some allowances to, like, make it a little bigger in certain places. They leave a little extra seam allowance in all the sort of spots so they can make it a little bigger if they need to. But I don't know. We'll see. I don't want to get anything changed because my body's still changing, I guess. I don't know. I feel like I haven't plateaued my workout routine yet.
What is it? myth about exercise, I think, is that, like, I think when you haven't been exercising very regularly, you have this idea that, like, if you're to start to go to spin class every day or CrossFit or whatever, like, that you're just going to suddenly look like a fitness model. When really, like, at least in my experience and with most of my friends, it's a very slight and gradual change to your shape. Like, you don't typically just drop, like, 40 pounds. It's just like, yeah, over time you can see that, like, the weight that was here is kind of shifted to over here, and yeah.
It's definitely slow. I have this sense, I don't know if this is backed up at all by medical science, but I have this sense that seeing as I started exercising at, like, age 30, that I will never have, like, even if I were to work out six times a day, I will never have, like, a big, beefy bod. Not that I want one either, but, like,
right.
I feel like my body already developed, and now I'm just, like, there's a certain range in which I can affect things within a certain margin. Whereas I think if I'd been doing what I'm doing now when I was 22 or 21, I think I would have a lot more potential to aspire to.
Yeah, I think that I've heard that if you do a lot of, like, weightlifting and stuff when you're younger, or when you're, like, still growing, it does, like, change your muscular structure and your skeletal structure forever.
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 What's that from? Sandlot.
Yeah, Sandlot.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to pull that, so I'm glad you did, because it would have bothered me. David Foster Wallace, by the way.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, David Foster Wallace.
Yep, gave that commencement speech.
Couldn't get that one.
wrote Infinite Jest. We were so loopy that day. That was great.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say you were very loopy.
And
I was responding in kind. No, I think it was.
You're still, a loopy too.
I was a little loopy. I try to be a little fun and loopy. I try to be over serious.
Yeah.
Day to day interactions.
You can be loopy.
It'll be fun.
Not a bad thing.
Uncle Andy's fun.
Yeah.
Mm.
Did
anyway,
ever,
huh? What were you going to say?
Yeah, if you ever dreamed about being a garbage man.
Oh,
so that you can ride on the back of the truck.
I did not. But I have some more follow-up on clothes. Because regarding you talking about Mark, and Mark, I love you if you're listening. I don't know if you listen. But I love you dearly. But I do think there's a thing that is true of Mark and true of many, many, many men where it's like society has kind of discouraged us from overly thinking about our looks. Like you described Mark as being unable to tell you what kind of clothes he wanted to wear,
right?
Which is, I think, very common amongst men. And again, this is probably overall a good thing because a society that is overly focused on your looks, overly concerned about them, has all the other horrible knock-on effects we see that women are affected by. But it is worth noting that, like, I also feel like this is kind of a weird blind spot for all men, myself included, where it's like, I mentioned to you at XOXO that I'm thinking about possibly dyeing my hair for the first time ever in my life at all. And the, like, just kind of mulling this over has me all, like, twisted in, like, weird knots. I don't know what to make of it. And I feel like that comes from, like, men are not used to thinking about how they look and to, like, considering their identity as a, like, considering their body and clothes and, like, personage as a representation of them to the outside world. It's like a thing that you're supposed to ignore if you're a man.
Right.
And I think the healthiest thing would be somewhere in between what the, like, hellscape that women are subjected to where, you know, people will call them a whore if their skirt is a little bit too short, and the, like, complete apathetic expectation of men that, like, you're just going to throw on a sweatshirt and, you know, go chop down a tree, and that's all
exactly.
You got to do.
Exactly. It is very annoying.
It's hard to, like, change that, though. Like, it's hard for me. Like, I'm conscious of it now. Like, I feel like I don't have a completely resolved or healthy sense of self when it comes to, like, how I look.
Right.
But it's hard to figure out how to fix that, you know?
Yeah. Would you ever shave your head? How tight are you to your hair? I know you want gray hair.
I want gray
hair.
How
do you feel about no hair?
I've considered it before, not recently. Basically, before I found, there's a woman I found like 4 years ago that cuts my hair now, which is great. I love her. She gives me haircuts that I love every time. I never had like a person that I would go to get my hair cut. So I would always just go to, like, you know, the equivalent of the Supercuts. There was this like cheap barbershop in Baltimore I would go to. And every time they would just like fuck my hair up in myriad ways. And I would always hate it. Like, I always hated all my haircuts for my entire life until I met this woman. So in that phase, I considered, like, you know what would be really convenient? Just, like, shaving it all off. And then I could just shave it myself, stop paying for haircuts, never have to worry about going bald, never have to worry about getting a bad haircut at this horrible place anymore. But I could never commit to it. I could never make that leap. And then I haven't really thought about it as much recently. If I started to go more bald, I probably would just shave my head. I don't think I'd have too many reservations about that if I was going bald.
Well, that's cool.
Not to you know, say that bald isn't beautiful. Like, you can have whatever hair pattern you want. It can be good. But I feel like if I had a funky hair pattern going on, I'd probably want to shave it off and not deal with it.
Yeah. My ex-husband was a bald man.
Bald by choice? Bald by nature?
A little bit of both. Like,
baldy by nature.
Yeah, like, it started to thin. He had, like, a big widow's peak. Like, his pattern was, like, the intense widow's peak thing. Mm. And when he was, like, 27 or something, he was just like, you know what? Fuck it. And I'm just going to embrace it. And so he shaved his head and was just always like, yeah, I look cool. I love my bald head. And I think that's, like, what you have to do with any style choice that you make. Just be, like, confident about it and be like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm cool and bald.
Yeah, it definitely comes down to your attitude, I think. At least how people are going to read that on you.
Right.
But yeah, to me, gray hair is the gold standard. I just want to go gray so bad. Short of that, I'm not sure what I would do. One thing I feel that I've always felt like, so the only direction I ever give the person cutting my hair at this haircutter place, and she's a younger woman, so she's very, like, stylish and actually, like, up on fashion, as you might expect a, you know, hairstylist to be. And she's always trying to give me what I describe as a Macklemore haircut, and I'm like, I don't want to look like Macklemore, because Macklemore's haircut looks like a white supremacist. I'm like, you can't...
Wait, is that, like, the high and tight thing?
That's, like, where the sides are short, and then the top is got longer stuff going on in various combinations. But the, like, the trendy, stylish haircuts, I think this is on its way out a little bit, but, like, for the past couple years, it's been, like, really short on the sides, and then, you know, whatever kind of thing you got going on top, like a big kind of poofy thing. And so I'm always like, my only direction to you is, I do not want to look like a fucking alt-right douchebag. Like, don't go too short on the sides and too long on the top, because I don't look like a Macklemore. And I don't want that. Or Richard Spencer. Richard Spencer has that same haircut, and he is a douchebag. So,
Kim Jong-un.
Right.
Same situation.
A different kind of right-wing douchebag.
Right. Which, my niece had that hair when she was a baby. It was so funny. It just, like, took a long time to grow in on the sides, but she had just this, like, thick black straight hair on the very top of her head, and she looked like Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
It was very cute.
Something I've lamented in the past is I feel like I have just, like, straight brown hair, like normal ass hair. There's nothing to recommend it. And I feel like if you're a white dude with straight brown normal ass hair, I shouldn't say normal, because obviously all different kinds of hair are normal. I have, like, default white guy hair. And with default white guy hair, there's, like,
you're like the Facebook user avatar.
Well, there's really no haircuts that don't have cultural associations that I want to distance myself from that can be associated with my hair, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's trendy right now is this, like, high and tight thing, which I kind of directly associate with the alt-right and, you know, that whole, like, white power movement, which I obviously don't want to be associated with. I could go, like, far to the other end of the spectrum and, like, grow my hair out and have a man bun, and then I'm just, like, a hipster, you know, artsy asshole that's, like, it's, like, entitled and self-indulgent and whatever. Or I could, like, shave it real short or, like, buzz it real short, and that's got, like, military implications. Like, the sort of buzz cut right now is not in fashion, so if you're rocking a buzz cut, you're, like, probably a, like, military or military-adjacent person, like the police or something. So I'm off that. Like, the classic, like, preppy haircut with the, you know, the part, and then you got two-thirds of it going to the left and a third of it going to the right, and, like, you know, kind of, like, you know, shortish on the sides, but not as short as the Macklemore haircut, has all those, like, preppy and, like, classist affiliations.
Yep.
Anyway, I overthink about all this stuff, and I'm eventually just like, Markeisha, do whatever you want to do to my head. I don't care. Just don't make me look like Richard Spencer. And she does a good job every time.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly, I don't think about it at all. It's not at all.
Yeah, you don't think about it at all.
Definitely not.
I like how you, like, prefaced that whole thing with, like, yeah, men don't aren't allowed to think about this stuff at all. Only women have it hard. But apparently there are lots of nuances that you can get lost in.
Yeah, you can definitely overthink stuff. A thing. Let me, if you give me a subject, I'll show you how to overthink it. That's my main move.
Do you remember your first haircut?
No, definitely not. I don't have memories. Like, I frankly, like, the degree to which I don't have memories from my early life makes it very difficult for me to believe people that say they do remember things like that, because I have nothing. Like, I think I can recall, like, one vague, mildly traumatic memory from, like, second grade, and then it's just a blank slate until, like, fourth grade when I have a few spotty things, but like definitely not my first haircut. No, wait, do you remember your first haircut?
Well, yeah, and that's what I love about memories is that like I'm not actually remembering the thing. I'm like remembering a string of memories of the thing.
Yeah, you're remembering how you feel and about the memory of the thing that you remember a while ago.
There's a visual component to it too. Like I visually remember like the wood panels in this barbershop, and then like that it was one of those places where you would sit, the kids would sit on like a, it looked like a merry-go-round horse. Right. So you would
or like
sit on
a
thing
a big
like
plastic
that.
Airplane or something, a fiberglass airplane.
Right. Yeah. So it was like, I remember that, and I remember a lollipop, and I remember a feeling of like, I don't like it. So yeah, there's a memory there. But that came back to me because I was getting my hair colored the other day, and there was this woman who brought her child in for one of his first haircuts, and it looked like the most traumatizing thing for the hairstylist to have to do, because this kid is just wiggling around, and every time she gets the scissors close to his head, he, like, turns his head really quickly.
Oof,
and I'm like,
stuff.
Oh, my God. Like, it was so stressful watching him try to get his haircut. But she nailed it. She's great. She's super patient. They ended up giving him an iPhone with some like cartoons on it and some food. But, yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can't remember that.
So what do you remember about your first haircut? Just the visual of sitting in that, sitting on that horse and looking at that wood paneling?
Yeah, just the visual and like the vague emotional trauma of it. I think it was hard. I had like really long and ratty hair. I had super long hair. I remember that was like a thing about me because I didn't really get it cut until I was like 5. So it went down to my butt and it was all crazy. Oh.
I had one very traumatic haircut for me growing up. I had a very rough sixth grade experience,
ooh,
which I think is not uncommon. Middle school is difficult, but yeah, I had I basically went from getting all A's and like being really good in school to like all of a sudden just failing everything and not doing my homework for like inexplicable reasons that in hindsight are probably just related to being a hormonal teenager and not being able to like manage my shit. But I ended up having like a small panic attack, and I like couldn't go to school one day because I couldn't breathe because I was so nervous about all these grades I was failing. It was a rough year. But I remember specifically going back to seventh grade. So I'm old at this point, like old enough that I should be, well, old enough that society taught me I should be above getting a bad haircut and caring about it as a man.
No way! That's when you're the most insecure, when like a zit can ruin your whole week.
Well, anyway, I was going into seventh grade, and up for like from ages like 10 until sixth grade, I always did buzz cuts because that was the thing my dad did in our backyard when I was growing up. He would take me out in the backyard with my other cousins that were boys, and the beginning of the summer was he would buzz our hair off with a buzzer, and then like, that was what I did for my haircuts for a lot of my childhood, which is not a good look, especially when your head is enormous like mine. I've got like a planetary head, and it's not good when it's just buzzed. Anyway,
I do too. Next time we're together, let's measure our heads and see who's bigger.
Linda, my head is so much bigger than yours. There's no question.
Okay. All right, so what happened? What was the traumatic haircut?
I like that you just accepted that. so anyway, I like had let my hair grow out for the summer, the first summer I hadn't done a buzz cut, and I remember going to, my mom took me to this like barber shop that was in like someone's garage in the suburbs. This is a thing in the suburbs where like people will open a like barber shop out of their house. So this was like a barber shop in some guy's garage in some cul-de-sac, and the only thing I told the guy is like, I don't want a buzz cut because I'm like over buzz cuts. And then the first thing he did was like take a buzzer and just buzz the whole, like buzz like right down the middle of my head, basically. I remember sitting there the whole time in the chair, like trying not to burst out crying. And then I got in the car to drive home and just sobbed the whole way home because I was like going to reinvent myself after a really rough sixth grade and go into seventh grade and be a better year. And it's going to go in with this like different haircut, more grown up. And then just got another buzz cut and was like fucking devastated by it, destroyed.
That is so hard.
Did you ever have a traumatic haircut?
I don't think so. Like I remember like cutting my hair a lot. Like so, all through college, I cut my own hair.
Oh yeah.
And like I remember really fucking it up like once or twice and being like, oh no, I need a professional. But, like, not being able to afford a professional haircut. So, just kind of, like, living with it. But being like, whatever, I'm punk. It's cool. I meant for it to look like this.
Crooked bangs are going to be in. Trust me.
Yeah, totally. But, yeah, I don't really think I had any traumatic stuff like that.
That's good that you managed to escape, you know, adolescence without having a traumatic haircut. I feel like that's a thing that a lot of women go through at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it was with other stuff. It was like my body was like 3 times bigger than I felt like it should be. And like, it was like that kind of stuff that I was obsessive and sad about.
That's hard.
My hair was like my one really good feature. Like, I feel like I have a really thick head of hair and I always like wore it with a lot of pride. And through middle school, I actually bleached it like white so that people could color it with markers. So that was kind of like a way that I would connect to people in class.
You were cool as hell.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, go for it. I don't give a fuck. Draw whatever you want in my hair.
You invented Manic Pixie Dream Girl in middle school before it was a thing.
Is that a thing?
You've never heard of the term Manic Pixie Dream Girl?
No.
Wow. That's like it's like a trope in film and movies and stuff where there's this like quirky hipster girl that, you know, is an oddball but lovable.
Yeah, I was like a mixture of that and Daria.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I can see that. Though Daria wouldn't dye her hair white and let people color it with markers.
Yeah. And I was always like making stuff out of other stuff. Like I had this belt that I made out of Bazooka bubblegum wrappers and like...
Damn.
I would like go thrifting and like repurpose old lunchboxes and whatever.
Yeah, you were like a bazillion times cooler than me. There's nothing about me in middle school or even high school to recommend to be like, oh, to look back on it and be like, that was kind of cool. No, there's nothing. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
That's one thing I could say with confidence that like is maybe one of the only things I have like a healthy self-image about is I feel like every year of my life, I have been more attractive than the year before. Like... just as time has gone on, like I don't feel like I peaked ever. I feel like I'm still on my way to whatever my peak is going to be.
I kind of feel like that too.
I think that's how you should feel.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like definitely hit a high point when I was like 26, like 25, 26. I found like, I don't know, it was like I finally dropped like my baby fat, and I mean that in a way like not. It wasn't like the fat that was a part of it. It's just like your features kind of develop into this way that is like. Finally not awkward and just like mature and I had confidence and yeah, I just felt like, damn, I'm pretty hot. And like right now, like I feel pretty good about where I'm at. Like this morning I went to the spin class yesterday and there are all these like lasers and black lights and shit. And I think everything about the lighting in this room made you look like 10 times buffer than you actually are.
Right.
So I was like, damn, I look good. And then, so I came back into my hotel room and was changing. And I like, for once, caught a glimpse and was like, all right, okay. It was just, and we talked about
good
this
for
before,
you.
But it was like my shoulders, like just little things. Like I really like the way my shoulders and my chest look right now. And like, I'll take it. Like if I feel
you,
like
Linda.
I'm, thank you.
Way to have
I'm
a like positive more, self-image.
More fit right now than I definitely was when I was 17. I don't think I really lived in my body back then because I didn't like do a lot of exercise. I didn't have a lot of like body awareness. I don't know. I think I just kind of ignored it and lived in my head.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I can sympathize.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm just, I think I'm getting hotter as time goes on. So we'll see. We'll see where this stops. Good for us. Good for us old hot people.
I love it, and I hope that when we're 70, we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe, who knows? We'll see.
Do we have a sponsor tonight?
No sponsors tonight. If you want to sponsor Earth to Linda, send me $4. Venmo, Instagram, not Instagram, Cash App. Yeah, I don't know why I said Instagram. That's definitely not how you pay me money.
Send us money wherever money is sold.
Yeah, everywhere you listen to podcasts, just send me $4, wherever you find podcasts. And yeah, we'll do an episode in your honor as long as you're not a company. Only people. People only. But that's it, Linda. Enjoy the rest of your time in Boston. Oh, I do want it on the record. I want it on the record that, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago after my first spin class. And I said that it was very difficult and I couldn't pedal to the beat. And I would like to report that on my second spin class, I was able to do it to the beat and did much better. So let that be noted for the record. I was pedaling, pedaling to the beat of that house music pretty capably. So
I do want to say that the second teacher was a little bit easier than the first.
Okay, you're gonna take away my accomplishment like this?
No, you did better.
Yeah, next
and
time.
And you knew what you were getting yourself into, you know?
Next time I'll have to get the hand motions down.
Yeah.
Still not good at doing the hand motions and also pedaling to a beat. That's one step too far for me right now.
It's hard stuff.
Yeah, very difficult. All right, Linda.
All right.
Have a great evening. And yeah.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure talking to you.
You too, Andy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.